Joining us right now on Breakthrough Entertainment is actor Fran Kranz, who stars in the new comedic murder mystery, Murder of a Cat. First of all, Fran, thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
Yeah, of course. Of course. How are you?
Great. First of all, let me tell our listeners a little bit about Murder of a Cat. In it, Fran plays an action figure designer who wakes up one morning to find his cat impaled by a crossbow arrow and sets off to find out who killed him and why. As he delves deeper into the case, he uncovers a town-wide conspiracy far greater than he ever imagined. We'll start with a fun question, Fran. Do you or have you ever owned a cat?
Yes, my first pet was a cat. His name was Clark. Apparently I named him, I don't remember, named him after Superman, and he wandered into my parents' house or onto our property when I was, I think I was like 1 or 2 years old. I mean, we're talking truly first pet. He wandered on, he was not our cat, he was fully grown. When I think we took him to a vet, they discovered he'd already been neutered. You know, he was clearly someone else's pet, and he just sort of, I guess, got tired of him. Very, very master, by the way, for him to just sort of wander off and find a new owner. He was like my best friend. Got lots of great photos of him. He actually died when I was 18, which is crazy because you have to assume he was fully grown when I was 1 or 2. And so we guessed, you know, the vets guessed he was probably almost around 21 years old, which is pretty incredible. He was this black and white cat, super cool. Eventually we got dogs, which I'm sure he wasn't, you know, happy about, but he was always, you know, cool and tried to get along as best as he could with, you know, this sort of inferior species. I'm much more of a dog person now. I got 2 Goldens back in Los Angeles at my parents' house. It's where I grew up in L.A., so those are still my pets. I feel like if I had my own pet on the road with me or where I live in L.A. by myself, I think my dogs would get jealous. So I just keep it in the family. But yeah, Clark, my first cat, the answer to a lot of my security questions.
That's awesome. I have a cat, but frankly, I'm a duck person myself.
No way. That's so cool. Pet duck, huh?
Yes, his name is Frozen, and he wears a diaper.
Wait, what's the duck's name?
Frozen. I named him after that horror movie set on the ski lift from a few years back.
Oh, yeah, cool. That's funny. I thought you said diaper, but now I know what you're referring to. But yeah, I was like, wow, did you name your duck diaper? That's kind of awesome.
Anyway, I state in my review that this is your most entertainingly eccentric character to date. Would you agree, and what do you think that it is about yourself that makes you such a great fit for fun characters like this?
Well, yeah, no, that's nice of you, because, you know, apparently some people find him to be really, really obnoxious. I think I read one review. I try to stay away from reviews. I sort of believe that even good ones don't do you any good. You know what I mean? You know, just sort of stay the course and sort of trust your instincts and what's going on around you on set or on stage, as the case may be right now. I'm doing a play, but, he absolutely, it's one of the weirdest characters, most eccentric characters ever played. That's what I loved about the script when I first saw it. And it's not just him. That's sort of the whole world. You know, I think with a lot of murder mysteries or noir film, I think a lot of characters' supporting roles are sort of their plot functions or their devices, and because of that, they're generally two-dimensional. And this movie, even really small supporting characters, actors that were on set for one day, kind of get to do a lot. Thomas Rounds, who plays this sort of crossbow specialist in Ford's Megastore, I mean, he does so much with this little character. Leonardo Nam, especially, who plays sort of, for lack of a better word, one of our villains. You know, he brings so much to the character, and that was already on the page. You know, so the world itself is eccentric, but those things I was into. But you know, I can relate to sort of the for lack of a better word, the kind of the sort of loser that Clinton is. You know, the sort of, you know, I think a lot of people still live at home in their 30s. You know, that's fine. But this is a kid that's very much, or a young man, and very much in arrested development, and someone that behaves like a child. I sort of saw him as an elitist without any real reason for being so. You know, the writers told me that one of their influences was Ignatius Reilly, who's, you know, from a Confederacy of Dunces, and that's an unlikable character. That's a very unappealing character that over a course of a long novel you sort of learn to love, but he's not meant to be lovable. He's not sort of typically seen as lovable, and I like that because I'm sort of, you know, when I was growing up, I was made fun of a lot. I enjoyed being at home playing with my toys by myself because it often was, you know, the happiest place for me to be, you know. You know, I had, you know, a brother, you know, Clinton sort of is an only child. He lives at home with his mom, so it's all the more reason that he sort of loses himself in the world of his toys and his cat, who's literally his best and only friend. And so I don't know, I have empathy for that. I can sympathize with someone that sort of has been bullied or mistreated by the outside world and eventually just sort of turns inward and to find their peace and their happiness and sort of their place. And, you know, I think that there's something really interesting about that. And there's a great, you know, there usually is a great story behind people that are that way. And, you know, with Clinton, you know, I think, you know, we talked a lot on set about, is he too unlikable? Are you making him too unlikable, too annoying? You know, you're really embracing the sort of the weirdo here. And is that okay? You know, because ultimately he's our hero. And I don't know, I felt, and the writers agreed with me that, you know, there's something, when someone's passionate about something, that's attractive, you know, and sometimes it doesn't matter what they're passionate about, you know, and when someone really loves something, that's cool, you know, that's admirable. And I think it's one of the reasons we often like bad guys, you know, some bad guys, they're just so good and passionate about being bad that's cool, that makes them attractive. It's like the Joker's an awesome bad guy because he's just so good and loves being bad and evil, and you know, the anarchist in him, Clinton's not the Joker, but he is so committed, there's so much conviction in his behavior, you know, and his outrage over his best friend being murdered, that I was hoping that would sort of outshine the sort of his less appealing traits and qualities. So, you know, it was obviously a challenge, and I know that there's plenty of people that you know, are not going to like it. But I appreciate it for you. I appreciate you sort of seeing it the way I was hoping it would be seen, that it's someone eccentric but ultimately sort of likable and worthy of storytelling, you know.
Absolutely. What an insightful answer. And I agree with all of that, especially that he's likable and relatable. Now, Murder of a Cat's cast is quite incredible. It's got Nicky Reed, J.K. Simmons, and Blythe Danner, as well as Greg Kinnear, and as you mentioned, Leonardo Nam, who also play up their characters' quirky qualities. Is it more difficult or is it more fun when you've got silly material with which to work and multiple top-notch actors bringing the funny?
You know, when you have those kind of actors, first of all, it was very cool because of actors' schedules. I mean, obviously, Murder of a Cat, we were working on a small budget with a short, a short shooting schedule, and we were dependent on people's schedules, and because of that, you know, we'd have one week that was Greg Kinnear, the next week would be J.K. Simmons, the next week it was Blythe Danner. So it was kind of this wonderful, re-energizing shoot because, you know, sort of each day there was some new star on set or a new kind of energy or story to tell, which, you know, was really, it made it a really incredible and fun experience. But when someone like Greg Kinnear's on set, the material is elevated naturally because he's such an amazing, you know, awesome actor, and he takes it very seriously and is so committed. You know, he showed up and he knew all of his lines and knew exactly what he wanted to do and had 1,000 ideas about what the character should be, and he wanted to improvise and was, you know, all constantly pushing the envelope and changing things with each take. So you know, all of a sudden you kind of you forget that the script or story might be silly, it might be sort of, you know, a screwball comedy or however it could be labeled, and it just starts to feel like great work. I mean, there's a scene where I come and find Greg Kinnear's character disheveled and drunk in his bedroom with all the lights off, and he's drinking whiskey and he's just a mess. And, you know, it felt like we were doing some really, really incredible, you know, Oscar-worthy acting in there. You know what I mean? It was really juicy material. It was really fun, you know? And so I think you have to approach it with the highest hopes, you know? I think you have to save disappointment for the last possible second, you know? You have to believe what you're doing is great. And then hope for the best, hope that, you know, the editing works and the distribution and everything, and it'll come out and people will like it. All that stuff sort of is out of your control. And when you're on set, you kind of have to hope for the best. And when someone like Greg Kinnear or J.K. Simmons is around and they're working their ass off with you, it's really special. And it makes it a lot easier to believe that, to sort of adhere to that kind of hoping for the best attitude and believing what you're doing is great, you know?
Sure, sure. I want to mention, by the way, that I was a fan of your short-lived sitcom, Welcome to the Captain. That was so great, and I wish that viewers had discovered it, you know?
Oh, nice. Yeah. That was a fun little show, man. Yeah.
Yeah, and then, of course, you've been in Cabin in the Woods among so many other fantastic films.
Thanks. I mean, Cabin in the Woods is awesome. I mean, there's just no getting around it. That movie is awesome.
Absolutely. But now you've got several other projects coming up soon. Greg, one of our co-hosts here on Breakthrough Entertainment, has been going on and on about how much he's looking forward to the Hebrew Hammer versus Hitler, while I'm partial to Blood-Sucking Bastards. What of the films on your upcoming slate are you most excited to share with the world, and why?
Well, okay, I guess you said Blood-Sucking Bastards. That movie is going to be so awesome. It's sort of Shaun of the Dead meets Office Space. It's sort of these guys in a, you know, sort of a boring windowless sort of cubicle sort of office, and everyone's just sort of bored and doing a half-assed job and bad effort, and so eventually the company starts hiring vampires because they're better workers. And then the humans have to revolt. It's pretty great, and it was so much fun to shoot. Dr. God, the comedy group, as an improv-based comedy group out in L.A., they wrote the script, and they all play small roles in the film, and so a lot of the actors got to improvise with these guys that are super talented, and it just developed into a really, really wonderful, really funny and gross movie. And so I think horror fans and comedy fans will really enjoy this one. And I know it's got some good news coming. Nothing I can talk about, but I know that there's some really good news for it coming up in the next couple weeks. And then Mojave, especially for you guys out there, because you're so close to the Mojave. Mojave is an amazing movie that was written and directed by William Moynihan. He wrote The Departed. I mean, he's like beyond brilliant. Really, really cool writer, director, super intense guy. It's a very original script starring Garrett Hedlund and Oscar Isaac. And Oscar Isaac's in the new Star Wars. I mean, it doesn't get better than that. And Garrett Hedlund gives this amazing performance. I have a small role in that, but it was one of the best scripts I ever read. I'm super, super proud to be in it. So yeah, look out for Mojave as well as, you know, Blood-Sucking Bastards. But yeah, I'm lucky. I get to do a lot of work on a lot of interesting films, and so I'm sure I'm forgetting about things. But I think you said two, so I'm just gonna stop right there.
We can't wait. They both sound spectacular. And I have to say that this has been an amazing interview. If you were ever in Phoenix, we would love to have you join us in studio.
Oh, I love that. I actually flew out to Phoenix to see the Lakers play the Suns when Shaq was on the team, when he came over. I'm a big Lakers fan, so I flew out there. I love that city. There's some good food out there. I'd love to get back out there, Shane.
Awesome. Well, once again, I want to thank you, actor Fran Kranz, for taking the time to talk with us here on Breakthrough Entertainment. Best of luck with this weekend's release of Murder of a Cat.
Thanks, man. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me.